Edmonton and Vancouver were off the hop early here and pushing their case with, especially in the case of Edmonton, with a lot of support from the provincial government and from civic officials. And yet, here we are. It's July 2nd. Happy Canada Day, by the way, Spec, or day after Canada Day. It's July 2nd, and Edmonton, which was way in front of everybody else, now thinks it might be a hub city, even though it hasn't been formally named. I mean, how is that going over in Edmonton, the fact that they were very aggressive out of the gate, and it appears that the NHL, for the most part, looked around at a bunch of other cities before deciding Edmonton was going to be one of the cities?
Yeah. You know what? That's what Edmonton is. I'm born and raised out here, and I get it. Like, we're not sitting here saying, oh, sure, we're the last choice. You know, go take a hike, NHL. You wanted everyone else ahead of us. That's not how Edmonton works. We get it. We're a small city. You know, we got to punch above our weight out here to get big events. But the opposite is also true, guys. You know, there's one event that always comes to my mind. Remember when, I think it was like 92 or 93, that Toronto hosted the World Indoor Track and Field Championships. And my recollection is it did just awful. And the city didn't get behind it, and the Sky Dome was empty. And then a few years later, 2001, Edmonton hosted the outdoors. And everyone said, oh, come on. I mean, Edmonton's not even a track town. Well, they out here, because we're a small town, and we're worried about how what everyone thinks, we want everyone to like us here. Right? We want everyone to say nice things about Edmonton. Well, they put 40,000 people a day for 10 days in a football stadium to watch track and field in Edmonton, which was unheard of. And that's kind of what we're doing here. We got this NHL thing now. We don't care that they wanted to go to Vegas and Vancouver, the average Edmontonian. They're happy to have it here. And I think that you will see, as it goes on, people will leave Edmonton saying, man, I thought this was a cold, dark city that had nothing to do. As it turns out, my time spent here gives me an entirely new impression of what's going on in Edmonton.
Mark, I realize you can't speak for every citizen, but in terms of sentiment, what kind of sentiment have you found regarding players coming in globally, particularly from the United States, into Edmonton? And what would your average person in Edmonton think about any kind of possible public health concerns of people coming into a place which has done a very, very good job when it comes to COVID-19?
Yeah, there's a lot. You know, we're like every city. Everyone has different levels of what concerns them. And there's a lot of people that are concerned about that, Richard. You know, and I've seen some voices, mostly on social media here, because we're not exactly hanging around with a lot of people these days. But yes, it's a very legitimate concern. We're bringing in players who theoretically are being tested before they fly here. And theoretically, they will not bring any additional virus into our city, and theoretically they will live in a bubble that will mitigate, right, any virus that you know, growing among people whose homes are in, you know, places like Arizona and Texas. Theoretically it's a pretty safe situation, but you know, we all know that stuff can go bad. So I guess all I'd say to you is, I mean, the reality of this thing is these players will live in a bubble. And if they infect, you know, if an infection occurs, it will mostly remain inside that bubble. But yeah, there's going to be hotel workers, and there's going to be people who have to enter and leave that bubble. And the possibility exists, and we're not immune to that feeling. Everyone here realizes it. But you know what? I haven't heard enough dissent that anyone's going to stop this thing from happening. How about that?
So initially, when this whole process appeared to pick up steam, and it became obvious that the NHL and the NHLPA were going to be able to, or at least the NHLPA's executive committee, they were going to be able to craft some sort of framework that they could present to the players and not have it immediately shot down. We were all talking about how great it was that the NHL and the NHLPA had kind of come together in face of coronavirus, and not only were they working towards a resumption of play spec, while they were also taking steps towards a new CBA. And my goodness, this is just, it's such a unifying moment. It's going to look good to present to your TV partners next year. You know, we've got a new CBA, and we're united, and we're going to come out of this stronger, et cetera, et cetera. And now you start hearing reports that there are some aspects of the CBA negotiations that not all players are on board with. There may be some aspects of return to play protocol that some players might have an issue with. Is there any concern in your part, Spec, that the NHL and NHLPA has bitten off way too much here and that the focus shouldn't be get back on the ice as safely as possible?
Well, you know what? It's sort of a bunch of separate conversations, Jeff, right? It's I think if they would have had the ability to just figure out how to get back on the ice, I think they would have figured it out. The NBA's figured it out. Baseball's trying to figure it out. That's doable. Let's say that. You know, let's measure our risk and then let's go ahead. But the problem is the whole thing got lumped in with, you know, like on July 1st, a whole bunch of contracts expired. So they got to dig into the CBA and fix that. You know, beginning July 1st, there's like 400, I think it was $66 million in signing bonuses that are paid out anywhere between July 1st and basically September 1st. You know, Austin Matthews, isn't he $15.3 million or something he's owed? Connor McDavid, $13 million, I think it's July 15th. So the point I'm trying to make is this. Every layer of the onion that got pulled off of this thing, it became you're digging in the CBA here and you're digging in the CBA there, and now we're going to dig in it here. And before you knew it, I had an agent tell me yesterday there was just no way to take away all the separate itemize all the problems and fix them individually. It became a CBA negotiation just because of the sheer mass of changes that had to get made here. So, you know what? I will say this: it sounds like guys, and I'm not reporting it, but it sounds like they're going to pull this off. And they're going to fix their CBA, they're extend the CBA. They're going to give us Olympic participation for the next two Olympics, which is awesome. And they're going to get back on the ice. So, you know, I'm as critical of these two sides as any guy is. But if they can pull all this stuff off and give us the Olympics and give us hockey and get this thing back on the tracks, I think we should probably give them some credit because it's no small feat.
Mark, from your reporting and analysis, how do you think the arrival of the NHL in Edmonton will impact the Edmonton Oilers?
What do you mean impact the Edmonton Oilers? What are you talking about?
In terms of, you know, it seems like it's a little unclear as to where they will potentially be between a hub city in Toronto and a hub city in Edmonton. But if nothing else, you know, it does benefit the organization, I guess, to use its facilities, to use its arena. You know, I'm curious as to what you think, you know, how you think the whatever the setup is ultimately impacts them.
Yeah, right. What's in it for, you know, I think the question almost becomes what's in it? Like the Oilers organization, they've been working their tails off on this thing for 2 months. You know, while most of us sports writers have been looking for make work projects, they've been, so have the people in Vancouver and Vegas. Like, it's a big deal. It's like an Olympic bid almost, maybe a smaller bid, but it's the same sort of thing. So what is in it? You know, I question that a little bit. Sure, there's some economic viability here. You get a bunch of teams come in, they rent a couple hotels. You know, there's a lot of staff who get to work now that would normally not be working and laid off. There's all those things. So there's a, you know, a modicum of economic impact here, which every city, I think, you know, doesn't scoff at these days, the way our economy is. But, you know, I think for the Edmonton Oilers, guys, this is sort of a riff on the theme I opened with here is, you know, Edmonton's like a place like Toronto or Chicago, or they're big cities that are confident in themselves. They don't need to please anybody. Edmonton's always that little guy that they want to put their hand up and do something like this and prove they can pull it off. And we've got that. We're a small major city, you know, and all I can say is they've got the facilities. The facilities here are frankly second to none in terms of creating a bubble and the arena and the practice rink. And you can come here and play a game of golf where you can't in 40 degree weather in Las Vegas. They got everything they need to do it here. And they put their hand up and said, yeah, we'll do this and we'll show everyone we can do this. And a lot of people listening in Toronto may laugh and dismiss Edmonton and go, ha-ha, you know. But, hey, that's what we are. We're a smaller Canadian city. We're Ottawa. We're Winnipeg in a lot of ways. And they have to try harder to get noticed and do things out here. And the track record, gentlemen, is when they put their hand up and they get the event, they knock it out of the park because they've been doing that ever since I was born in this city.
I'm thinking of the women's soccer competition in particular, which was staggering success, not just financially, but artistically as well. And really kind of provided the template for a lot of future for women's soccer. Our friend Jack Edwards, I'm sure you heard the Boston Bruins announcer was critical of the designation of two Canadian cities as hub cities because he imagined this home ice advantage. And the only home ice advantage I can see for the Leafs if they play at Scotiabank Arena is that they're probably the only team that's used to playing in front of very quiet home crowds to begin with. So for the average Leaf player, I'm not certain that having Scotiabank Arena empty is going to sound any more different than having Scotiabank Arena full. So that's the only home ice advantage I see there. And you're right, it is awfully hard work to try to work a slap in at Toronto fans. I get all that, but it makes sense from a financial point of view as well, obviously, because you're functioning in Canadian dollars. But I'm also wondering if this isn't, do you think in some ways, I don't even know, Spec, how I'd describe it. It almost seems as if there's a possibility here for the NHL to make a case that it's kind of returned to its roots a little bit. And obviously it's not, I don't think anybody would say it's a good trade-off having a coronavirus to return to your roots. But the fact is you chose Toronto, you chose Edmonton, two markets that are hockey markets. Vegas is a hockey market, but most people in the world don't associate Vegas and hockey. It almost sounds right, doesn't it? Like, there's almost a feel-good aspect to this, I think, from a distance at least.
Well, I mean, there's certain things that had to happen. You know, guys, like, I don't care. I get it. It's about the virus first. It has to be. It's about safety first. And I believe that they've finally, on discarding a Vegas, they've proven that, yeah, they're respectful of this virus and they're not going into some place because the hotel's free. But in the reality of sports, there had to be an Eastern hub, gentlemen, right? There had to be. You can't take some of the league's most popular, the biggest markets in the league, Boston, Toronto, New York Rangers, Pittsburgh Penguins, Philadelphia Flyers, right? Washington Capitals. That's six teams that tip the balance of viewership in the National Hockey League. You can't put those six teams and tell your viewers, well, listen, the puck drops at 10 p.m. unless there was overtime in the games before us, and it might not start till 11, right? The sports doesn't work that way. We know it's all about money, and that costs too much money. So they had to go east. What's the safest eastern place in the entire National Hockey League? Well, maybe it's Ottawa,
Right.
It wasn't Montreal. And if it's not Ottawa, it's Toronto. And in the West, I know they wanted to go to Vancouver, and Vancouver is a very safe place, and Vancouver rejected, the health board rejected the plan. But after Vancouver, what's the safest place in the West? Well, it's in Alberta, it's Edmonton, maybe Winnipeg, but, the point I'm trying to make is they chose the very safest place to play. It was a circuitous route, gentlemen, to get here, but I think they ended up with the two safest places to put this thing on, and above all, if everyone comes out of this thing healthy, I think that's what matters.
Mark, what do you expect regarding the quality of play if we get this thing going?
Well, it's funny. I was talking to a coach the other day, and he said, one of the things is they're not all coming back in the same level of fitness. Every team is going to have some guys, or a couple guys, who didn't train as hard as they should have, right? And that means there's going to be a little bit of a tryout here at camp for all these teams. So the four lines, all the Leafs fans, pick the four lines that you watched when last they played, I think March 10 maybe. They probably won't be your first four lines after a couple of days of practice because there's going to be a couple of guys that aren't ready. So you know what? You got entire lineups of healthy players, which is really cool. Like no one's missing anybody almost. But there's different levels of fitness. So this is all new to us now. You know, if I'm the Leafs, I'm hoping like heck, you know, well, I know the Austin Matthews situation is a little different, but I hope that all my best players are the guys that skated the most and stayed in good shape. Because, you know, if one of your best guys isn't in shape, that's going to impact your quality. It's a short qualifying round. You need your best guys to be good. I think goaltending is going to be kind of cool because these guys haven't faced a lot of live rubber. So it's an unknown. Like the whole pandemic, guys, you know, you're asking me a question that I'm guessing at the answer. But I won't know it till I see how it plays out.
How do you think Alexis Lafreniere would look playing for the Oilers?
Oh, my God. Are they Team E, guys? Is Edmonton Team E?
I don't know. There are so many possibilities. There's so many.
You're trolling
there are so many,
me, man. You're
there's so many
me.
Possibilities out there. You know, I mean, there are. If you're a conspiracy, I guess he'd probably look better there than with Toronto. I don't know. I just think it's a situation that's tailor made for conspiracy theories. Hey, one question, just kind of a logistical question, Spec. How many Oilers players spent do we know how many Oilers players spent the coronavirus period in Edmonton?
Yeah, very few.
Okay.
Like four or five.
Okay.
Yeah, local guys, you know, Matt Benning's from here, Chris Russell's from down the road, and, you know, small country town, and a couple guys stayed, but generally speaking, everybody went home.